in the studio. Welcome, John.
Yes, I've survived till this year.
You've done well. Yes, it's our first chat. In fact, it's my first formal interview, although I did a little bit last Wednesday. But this is a proper morning show we're doing now, and just
as opposed to an improper one.
Yeah, well, there were a few improper morning shows while I was away, and I myself did a couple of improper ones during the last week, just because putting updates out for people about what's happening with State Highway 23, which at the moment is it appears to still be slipping a little bit. Did you? I don't know if you were looking at photos over the weekend.
Yes, the original photo was a small crack, and that small crack's now about a metre or so in height. So, yeah.
I had the pleasure of driving through it after it had started slipping. And
when it was still single lane?
No. All they'd got up was a 30 sign. At the time I came through, I drove to Hamilton on last Monday, was it? And on the way there, I didn't see anything. Obviously, it was the other side of the road, so I wouldn't have seen the crack. But when I came back through, it had dropped about 20 centimetres. And the sign was just round the corner. The 30 sign was one round one side of the corner. So I'd backed off the accelerator, but I was still doing about 70k when I got to, cause, and it surprises you around the corner. I didn't get any time to brake. There were cars on the other side of the road, so I kind of like aimed to get the right hand wheels with my car and my trailer above where the slump was happening, and the rest of me went through. That was all right.
Okay, so it's cool. Surprising there weren't any crashes.
Yeah, someone pointed out on Facebook, they appeared to know what they were talking about, that the 30 signs weren't done in the standard way. And I think we are used to like a long period of 30 before you actually get to the
danger. Yeah, well, you often see a 30 sign and there's no reason to slow down. So until you see something that's wrong, you tend to keep going at the normal speed.
Yeah, we're kind of trained. Anyway, it was not long after that they introduced some stop-go people. And then a little while after that, they stopped everyone and there was no go at all. So it could be a long time before that's fully fixed.
Yep. And I caught the bus on Friday and went the extra 37 kilometres round via Wainaro.
And how long did it take, John?
It's best part of 2 hours.
Best part of 2 hours. I've heard some of the school kids reported through my kids up to 3 hours. There might be, I don't know if that's an exaggeration or not, but if you're coming, yeah.
Well,
Did you come from the transport centre?
Yes, to Raglan.
And that bus is a single bus, isn't it? It goes all the way to the base and then...
I think it starts off at St. John's near the university.
Yeah, I was just looking that up. Yeah, it does. So there was a 340 bus.
Well, it was supposed to be a 340. It was about 355 when it turned up at the transport centre.
Okay.
So it was already late.
Yeah, so that so maybe...
Because they were trying to combine two buses together, so it had been around collecting from different schools.
Yeah.
Because not all the schools were fully back last week, so that's going to be more of a problem today and onwards.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit of, you'll call it a live experiment until they finesse it into place. But as I just mentioned before you arrived, and we were talking about this off the air, there is no workers' bus to get home. You can get to work, no trouble.
No, that's why I had to be on the school bus last week, because that was the last bus of the day.
It does appear that they've prioritised getting the kids to school and home again.
Yes.
There's many different buses going from different schools starting just a few minutes after each other as they try to get the kids through. So,
which is why they're starting half an hour earlier as well, because they announced that on the bus on the Friday, saying that this morning's bus was leaving at 6:30 rather than 6:50.
Mm. And are they using the double-deckers, or are the double-deckers not going down that route?
I'm not sure which part of the road won't stand the double-decker, but I suspect the bit up the top of the hill where it's always been slipping away on Ohutira Road.
Yeah, I remember when they sealed that road, there was a bit there that was the last bit to seal and it fell apart. This is going back years.
It's still falling apart.
But it's still, and I hear that the anecdotal evidence from people driving through at the moment through the detour is that
there's still cracks along that road.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about the cracks on that road at the moment. So it's far from ideal. I rang the 0800 number at Busset and said, what's the story? The lady was very apologetic, but of course she was just the person on the phone. So she has taken my number, and someone in management is going to give me a call later on. Probably not during the show. I can't imagine that'll happen, but they're probably having frantic. They're probably in meetings at the moment trying to plan for things. But at the moment...
Well, they've also got a meeting tomorrow to report to regional council as well.
So
one of the other difficulties they've got is that they've had to pay their drivers more because they were short of drivers. Well, still are short of drivers. So that's one of the problems with putting extra buses on. Because ideally they just put on an extra bus, and even though it takes too long to get here to form the return service on the normal timetable, they wouldn't have to cut the buses, but they haven't got any spare drivers. So
that might be why there's no workers' bus.
Yes.
All right, and they've decided to prioritise the kids because...
Because normally that...
Probably the parents will complain more than the workers would complain. Yes. I bet that... Is that the calculus that goes on, John?
Normally the school bus turns straight back and goes back into Hamilton and then forms the workers' bus at 6 o'clock. So what should be the 3:40 should get in at 4:50 and get back into Hamilton at 5:50 and then come back at 6 o'clock.
But it's probably going to come back at 7 or 7:30 if they were to do that.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, and then the bus driver would be...
way outside their
time. So another 4 hours, they'd get back at after 11, maybe midnight, into Hamilton back from work.
Yeah, and start at 6:30 again next morning.
Okay. I do see the problem. But you had an interesting suggestion that you just mentioned to me off the air about there's a proposed internal Raglan service.
Yeah. Well, as I was saying, regional council's talking tomorrow about its budget, and part of the budget is saying they're going to take $1 million off the proposed extra buses that we're looking at, because they've been aiming to gradually improve the bus service across the whole region, not just Raglan. And they've taken $1 million off that, and their excuse is that that's the cost of paying the drivers the extra wages.
$1 million? How much of a pay rise did they get?
Well, it went up from about $23 an hour to about $27 an hour. So,
how many bus drivers are there, though? Somebody do some maths and text me.
have a look at the regional council's report. The figures are in there.
$4 an hour for 40 hours a week. That's, okay.
That's one of the problems that they've got, that they haven't got that money. But on the other hand... Waikato District Council put aside $100,000 a year for more Raglan buses, for an internal Raglan bus to probably run from Greenslade Road to Whale Bay. They've not got round spending that money yet. They've done that. Well, they have got a survey that they did. We've not heard what they got out of the survey. And that $100,000's now been stacking up for a couple of years, and by July it would be $300,000 that they've not spent. So it seems to me that they could well spend that on hiring in extra buses from other companies.
I'm not sure there's 3 years' worth, because they wanted to do it, but they only confirmed funding last year. But nonetheless, there is some money.
Well, it was in the three-year long-term plan.
Yeah, so, but then they had to go and get money from that special fund that the CFO let them have. Or not maybe a special fund, but I don't know. I remember that the original funding fell through. But your general point that there should be some capacity there.
Well, the original idea was that $100,000 was going to be matched by $100,000 from government.
But
government said, you haven't done it the right way around. You've not got it into the regional plan, so we're not paying for it.
Was that the story there? Okay, so I get it. So, yeah, anyway, there's some capacity. And maybe someone's thought of this, but that means...
So there's at least 200,000 sitting around not doing very much at the moment.
The question is there a bus driver sitting around not doing very much at the moment? That might be the problem.
Well, we seem to be able to hire them in for Sound Splash and things like that. So I would have thought that around the region there are buses which are available for hire. Auckland or Wellington have disruptions on their train services, they just hire in buses to cover their train services.
Yeah, so there should be. Okay, all right. Well, John's had a good idea. We'll see what happens.
My idea was that they run a bus to where the slip is.
Yeah, no, listen to this idea, folks. This is an interesting one.
According to Google Maps, it's 600 metres, which takes 6 minutes to walk.
So the Hamilton bus will drive to the Hamilton side of the slip. People get out, walk through around the slip, and get on another bus. And I bet you're saying there's a 600 metres between turnaround spots for the buses.
Well, it's a driveway or driveways either side of the slip where I think they're big enough for a bus to turn around.
Yeah, I've also pointed out to John that buses probably have a reverse gear. So
yeah, well, buses quite often do three-point turns. So it's not unusual.
Yeah, so they could... given that there'll be no one else on the road, they could potentially reverse to the slip. Because some people actually walking 600 metres up a hill might be a little bit of an unnecessary challenge early in the morning.
Well, there is room to put a wheelchair on the bus, so they could hire a wheelchair. And
oh, do you want to push it up that hill? Yeah. All the other passengers have to be taking turns. Hey, that isn't an interesting idea, and I think people would find that kind of fun, actually, getting off the bus at one point, walking past the slip. And
it would probably also be the quickest way of getting to Hamilton at the moment.
Because how much has it added to the time?
It's an extra 37 kilometres on a windy road, so
at least an hour.
Yeah. Not an hour, it's probably about half an hour. So instead of taking three-quarters of an hour, it takes about an hour and a quarter.
Oh, does it? Oh, that's not as bad as I thought.
Depends how fast you drive that road. But,
you said you had a two-hour trip the other day to get back from Hamilton.
That was on the bus. I mean, buses take corners much slower than
That's what I mean. So that the extra time on the bus, how much extra time is there on the bus route now? Like an hour, more than an hour?
It's probably about 45 minutes, I think.
Okay.
Because getting from Whatawhata to Tiuku took three-quarters of an hour.
Did it? On the bus?
Yeah.
So all the stops?
Well, it stopped at Whatawhata to pick somebody up and then drop them off near the marae on the way, but apart from that, it didn't stop.
Do you mean the straight before the slip it took that long?
Well, it turned off the State Highway 23 at Whatawhata and headed up to Narawahia and then across to Wainaro and back down to Tiuku.
Oh, okay.
So it took three-quarters of an hour just for that part of the trip.
Okay, all right, that's good. That's useful information because I wasn't really sure. I was sort of stabbing in the dark. It's not as bad as I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah, but it also depends who's driving, as it always does with the bus.
Yeah, and how they feel. Yeah, okay. By the way, I did the calculations on the bus at $4 an hour for 40 hours a week. That's $160 an hour per staff member for 52 weeks of the year. That's about $8,000. Put that into a million, you get 125 drivers. So that $1 million actually seems quite realistic in terms of the pay rise. They probably do have somewhere over 100 drivers.
Yeah, as I say, the figures are in the report, but I haven't actually got it in front of me at the moment.
Okay, well, right, we get into a big discussion about how regional council and councils are funded, but we won't do that now. So that's that story there. We've got good ideas here in the studio. We don't know if anyone's taking them up, but it's a problem. And I don't know how they're going to resolve the workers one. Someone might have to throw some emergency money at it.
Again, that $200,000 would be useful.
Definitely at the moment. All right, John, let's move on to the wastewater situation. So the council gave the all clear for swimming in the water after they had to release treated sewage on the incoming tide. But as people were saying online, there was still the general instruction from regional council not to go into waterways after the flooding because there'd be lots of toxic crap in there, basically.
Yep.
Those are my words.
Probably we ought to correct some misapprehensions because some people hear that they're discharging on the incoming tide and ask why not on the outgoing tide.
So, did you see that person on Facebook? The other people were demanding that they apologise.
Not just the person on Facebook, but quite a few people have actually asked me that in the street. So, yes.
Yeah, the whole point of the announcement is that they do normally discharge on the outgoing tide. But in an emergency situation, they do it on the incoming tide so that the sewage doesn't overflow. And
yep.
Then you get raw sewage
That's it.
Going to places you don't want it. So it's not fantastic, but it's a lot better than the alternative.
Yeah, the alternative being that the sewage works overflows without being treated.
Yeah, and there's a creek right there, so it's going to go down through under the Walker Bridge.
Yeah.
Basically, like the perfectly worst place to put it past where all the kids swim. John, I saw some people saying, well, so this was exceptional rain that we had, so I'm not surprised.
We had the same problem in November as well.
Yes, so I'm not surprised what happened this time. All the Auckland beaches were closed because of what happened there, so that was exceptional. Maybe this exceptional is going to become the new normal with climate change, but as you said, last November we had this problem. I tried to ask council staff for some information, and the council staff, I kind of was fobbed off, and the comms department was almost apologetic at the information I got sent. The questions I was asking was just trying to find out how the water is getting, the rainwater getting into the sewage system, which is what's causing the overflows, because people talk about having smoke. We've seen smoke testing done, And I didn't get any useful information, but John found some useful information in a report for a meeting that's today. Is that meeting today, John?
7th of February. Yes.
Yeah. And basically, council has been doing quite a bit of work doing smoke testing, which they didn't find a lot of problems with that, which means probably most of the houses in Raglan no longer have their stormwater going into the sewage. They did some other types of testing as well, and they did some improvements. And we still got problems, though. We still got, when it rains heavily, not just exceptionally heavily like we've just had, but just heavily like we had in November, we're still getting potential for overflows. So, John, I haven't talked to any other councils. Is this just inevitable? Is it every council have this problem everywhere, that when there's a lot of rain, it just happens, and maybe there's pressure, water, lots of water in the ground forces its way into the stormwater pipes? I don't know. Like, does anyone know?
Well, this is a question that we keep raising whenever we have meetings with Watercare. And, yeah, pretty much the answer they give is, as you say, that every other council has the same problem.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to keep water out of sewage pipes.
Because most of the time they're empty, right? Mm-hmm. There's just air. And then you flush your toilet and a little bit will run down. Maybe if a whole lot of people flush their toilets at once, then the main sewer line will get quite full. But in terms of if the ground is waterlogged and there's water pressure, this is me guessing, right? I'm not an expert, but I've opened a manhole in my time or two. I just imagine the water pressure will force water into any leaky pipes.
Yeah. Well, it depends how leaky they are, because one of the other things they've been doing to try and overcome it is to do a closed-circuit television survey of their pipes, and they reckon they've got that more than 90% complete.
But if you've got like little leaks at a junction that aren't visible, but you've got those multiplied all through the system, and there's the ground's waterlogged and there's pressure, you can't really see that sort of problem, can you?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on stormwater and CCTV.
Obviously it would be harder.
But tunnels and coal mines and things like that have always had problems with water. Mm. That's why the steam engine was invented, to pump water out of coal mines and tin mines. Ever since people started doing things under the ground, it's the things they create get water in them.
So should we then be creating a system with the capacity to cope with that? Because if it's happening to everyone everywhere all the time...
Well, one of the solutions is to give up putting it into the harbour and actually put it on to the land, which is what they're now looking at in the area below Mangatawhiri Road.
They're looking at that seriously. But, John, is it not within that concept, if and when they get that resource consent, there will still be the capacity to pump it out to sea during times of excessive rain?
Well, they're still doing the work on that, see whether the land-based solution is one that they can use all year, or whether it's one that's summer only.
Yeah, so if we're talking about summer only, when the ground is normally dry, that means every year there will be quite a lot of pumping into the... how does it work? Do we still have the sewage works... treatments? Do we still have a treatment station and then it gets just put into the land? Is that how it goes? Do you have to treat it to the same standard to put it in the land as you put it in the sea?
Well, I think that's what they're talking about. But on the other hand, they're also talking about making use of the nutrients. And if you've taken most of the nutrients out of it, then, come to think of it, I'm wrong there. They don't take the nutrients out, they take the bacteria out.
Right.
So they treat the bacteria, but that's one of the problems with putting it into the sea, that the nutrients are still there. And that's one of the explanations for the algae blooms that we get from time to time.
Right, okay, we're sort of power loading the sea with nutrients.
Yes.
Yeah.
So actually putting it onto the land, hopefully they would grow some sort of crop, and they're still looking into what sort of crop would be best to use there and what would take up the most water.
Okay.
And the most nutrients. So, there's quite a bit of work still to be done, but I'm not quite sure how it works out with the temporary resource consent they got, because that expires in a few months' time. Mm. And whether they're going to get another extension to that, presumably they will.
We, at the time when they got that, we thought that was...
very generous.
Yeah, but now they...
they've come up to the end of their 3 years and still haven't worked out a solution.
I mean, I imagine we can use the COVID excuse. Probably has not made things easy, but maybe I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not aware that they've come up with any excuses so far. They've just not done it.
Yeah.
And we haven't had a public meeting since last July. But okay. They are going to be at the community board meeting tomorrow.
Ah, yes.
So we might hear some more at the community board meeting tomorrow, or an actual update, maybe following on, because one of the items on today's agenda is public excluded, talking about the Raglan sewage works. So it may
today's be agenda where?
That's the Waters Governance Board, the meeting we're just talking about.
Why is that publicly excluded?
Well, there are good reasons to have public exclusion and there are bad reasons. And the good reason would be they're talking about how much they want to pay for various things. And you don't tell a contractor, yeah, we'll pay $1.2 million if we have to, but we'd rather pay $800,000.
Yeah, right.
So the contractor will say, oh, this costs $1.2 million.
Yeah, we'll price it perfectly. Okay, all right. So we don't know the answer to that question. Off the tops of our heads. Okay, so the wastewater, we don't have a good solution. As Lisa Thompson said when I interviewed her last week, this is a sign that we need Three Waters.
Yes.
There's a long story about why we have underfunded our council services over the last 40 years, and it's not just in New Zealand, it's a lot of the Western world about its economic ideology, basically, is behind it. Doesn't matter now, though. We're in this situation, and when we had... We just spent money a few years ago because there was a lot of sewage going into the harbour about 5 or 6 years ago, and the community agreed to pay extra rates and the council to pay extra to solve that, and they kind of have solved it. But at the time, we looked at the fact that there's a lot of manholes and pump stations all around at near the high tide mark, and last week when it was raining, they had sucker trucks sucking stuff out of there, helping the pumps. Having that stuff at the high tide mark in an era of sea level rise, obviously a problem. So a lot of money is going to have to be spent, and no one wanted to spend that money last time round.
And whenever councils look at cutting budgets in order to save on rates, then it's that sort of thing that they look at saving on. Because there's a good article on the Greater Auckland website this morning, looking at the depreciation rates on stormwater assets in Auckland and what they've actually spent on stormwater, and they've only spent about half the amount on stormwater that they've allowed for in depreciation of their assets.
Yeah, out of sight.
Suggests that they're underspending as compared with what they think depreciation ought to be.
Yeah, that's it. 40 years of underspending, and here we are. So maybe it's unfortunate. Well, it is unfortunate that the co-governance debate got overlaid into the Three Waters thing, but what's happened over the last couple of weeks is a reminder of why we actually need to spend some money and get the money from somewhere, and I don't want to get into that. There's a big explanation, but I don't want to get into that right now. We're just going to stay local.
And John, as we've discussed before, one of the arguments against Three Waters is that we've got local control, but as we've said a few times, we don't actually have local control.
Well,
land-based sewage.
Who are these people who think that they've got local control over the sewage system? It's still run by... It's just shifting it from one bureaucracy to another. Yeah, I was never very impressed with that argument, and John and I know well how little control we have over things through council like that. John, should we have a little break and come back and talk about the community board meeting that's happening tomorrow, Wednesday, at 1:30 in the Town Hall Supper Room?
On the air, on the web, 24/7, raglanradio.com.
Hey, got the morning show with Aaron. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to use this page here, and you can we're just trying to get the right document to look at about the Raglan Community Board meeting. John's made an agenda at the moment. You can see it on Raglan 23. You'll be able to see it on raglanradio.com as well on our news feed on that website later today. So the first thing on the agenda is civil defence. John, this is topical all of a sudden. We've had some civil defence emergencies around the North Island, and I had the joy to participate in that, trying to drive back right through the middle of that storm from the far north. Got to spend the night in the Wellsford Community Centre with 60 other people, including one very loud snorer,
So that needs to be in the plan as well, does it? Have silent snorers?
Yes, I think so. I think that would be a really good idea. Other people seem to be able to sleep through it, though. But my experience of going through this was that it was the people on the ground, the communities, that were solving the problems. What happened? We had a detour near Waihee that got blocked because big trucks went down a road they shouldn't have. So then we came back and we found our own detour into Wellsford through, I won't bother with the details, but we worked it out through Google Maps and we got there. And we tried to do that because Waka Kotahi said that State Highway 16 was open. And we got to Wellsford and there were people everywhere milling around, and the queue back came to within 100 metres of the intersection for start of State Highway 16. People everywhere, we've spoke to people, said they'd tried all the different ways to get to Auckland and there was no way through. So Waka Kotahi's information was out of date. It was still out of date that night, late at night at about 11 when I tweeted them. And they were surprised, and it was still out of date the next day when we finally drove through State Highway 16.
So this is the problem of all the staff getting home at 7:30 in the evening, is it?
I feel like me and Marky could have put better information out about it in an emergency like that than they were able to. It might have been because they were focused on all the slips on State Highway 1 because the Brinduans went down. There were slips at Puhoi. The detour was getting slips or crashes, cars, trucks stuck across the road. But yeah, my experience was, and like in Wellsford, I asked them who got things going, but someone opened the community centre. The word went out on their Facebook page in their town, and people were bringing down mattresses. And the next morning, they gave us breakfast. They gave us like bacon and eggs and toast and cereals, and like, they had everything. Fruit salads were there, and they told us about they have a Facebook. It floods so often up there. They have a specific page dedicated Facebook group, community group, just on the roads. So they told us the name of that. We got on there and we found some information about how we could get through to State Highway 16 through this little back road. And compare that to, like, when we took off that morning, they were trying to get the new motorway set opened up so they could use that to get around the Puhoi slip. We parked, like, 20th in a queue, and I walked down the front to ask the guys in the orange jackets what was happening. They said, "We're told that it will be open soon." And we're like, "Well, how long is soon?" And they had no idea. So that was the best information we got officially, but on the unofficial Facebook channels, clear descriptions of how you could get across the State Highway 16 and what the conditions of the road were like and all that. So social media was delivering where official channels were not, and that was the experience everywhere. And when we did a couple of times, we were going down roads and there were just people who lived in the area standing there directing traffic. And when we got south of Helensville, State Highway 16, discovered it was actually flooded there. There was just a person in an orange jacket who I think was a local telling people to go back and how to get around a detour that didn't appear on an Waka Kotahi site till at least 24 hours after the road flooded. So, yeah, it was all down to locals stepping up. And maybe that's the way it always needs to be in an emergency. I don't know. But Civil Defence, John, didn't handle it very well.
Did you hear any mention of a civil defence plan whilst you were up there?
Well, in Wellsford?
Yeah.
No, it was all the community people. Okay. I don't know.
They weren't saying we're following a plan.
No, they couldn't even tell me who kicked the ball off and got it rolling. And I imagine that would happen here in Raglan in a similar situation, that we've got leaders in our community that people would look to and they would step up. It kind of happened when we had the COVID outbreak.
Because this is something that's been talked about for probably a decade or more.
Since the Christchurch earthquake, it's like we must have proper civil defence.
Yes.
And we've sat here and watched this issue be kicked around from person to person. Unfortunately, one of those was Bob McLeod, who passed away. But it's never, after 10 years after Christchurch, there still is not a proper civil defence plan.
Yep. So that's a prelude saying that the agenda for this meeting tomorrow says Mr. Amor, Mr. Wallace and Councillor Thompson will meet and discuss targets for civil defence in the first week of February.
So this must be on the back of staff work happening, isn't it?
Right, then says the chair to provide an update. So it's one of those many things on this agenda that we don't know too much about.
Yeah.
And it has been on the agenda, as you were saying, for a decade or so.
Yeah, and I don't know what's happened with why it's happened with a... They've been hiring staff who are useless for 10 years and coming and going. That's just conjecture, like, you know, or is there some reason that they can't get get the work done? I don't know.
Or maybe it's just too hard and that they don't know what's going to be the civil defence problem and they've pretty much given up and said, we don't know, we'll wait until, as they do in Wellsford, and everybody will get together and sort it out without a plan.
Yeah, well, we know we're set up at the radio station, like we can broadcast. People who don't own radios will have to go to their car to hear us, but or they'll be reliant, well, I think they'll be reliant on social media, but that's the problem these days is that people get their media in so many different platforms and you have to try to connect with them on all those different platforms. Uh-huh. It's a lot harder.
Because it does seem odd to me that these three people on the community board are meeting together and they're not involving the emergency services, because
I think
a few months ago they were talking about involving the emergency services and then COVID got in the way and they didn't, and that seems to have been forgotten.
Yeah, well, I think something's come from council staff, and they've, because I think I was at the meeting, and they were, I think it was the last meeting, they were just asked to form a subcommittee and start doing something. So that's sort of my memory. So it's early.
So maybe that weird, subcommittee weird decides to talk to the emergency services.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird to say this, but it's early days.
A mere 10 years on, yeah.
Yeah, well, but these three are now coming together. Obviously, none of them 10 years ago were on the community board, and Ross Wallace only just himself arrived a few weeks ago. We're near a walkway, John. Is there any new information there?
Not really.
Okay.
And they're looking to confirm the final design scope, which seems to me rather odd in that they're talking about consultation as well, and to actually do a final design scope without consulting seems rather weird to me.
Well, a design scope is not design. A scope is saying, because at the first, when this issue first came up at the community board, one of the members was like, look, why don't we sort out the fact that the cliff face there is falling all the time and just enlarge the scope of work and deal with all the problems at once. So I think by scope they mean whether they're going to do things like that.
Yeah, but surely that ought to be part of the consultation as to what ought to be within the scope. Clearly. Otherwise, you end up with a final design and you say, oh, I don't like that. And they say, well, that's outside our scope. It's already been decided.
Yeah, probably. But I also think that's, well, not but, but, okay, I said but. There's a budget thing. They're going to set a budget.
So by design scope,
or they're going to be given
design budget, do they?
Or they're going to be given a budget and they'll work out the scope based on that. Yeah. Anyway, in any case,
the wrong way around.
Yeah.
It seems to me there ought to be options. Do you want to pay extra for this version, which allows for a wide walkway, cycleway, and which avoids people falling off it, and which copes with sea level rise and
yeah,
storms and all the other things? Or do you want to get the bare minimum, which involves reinforcing what we've already got?
So that we know there's a lot of pressure on the finances, so I fully expect that to be the defining factor in this, no matter how hard John wishes it was different.
But with things like the food waste, they actually decided we were going to pay more for it because we voted to pay more. So I don't see why they shouldn't do that with things like this.
There wasn't much more, though.
Well, this doesn't necessarily need to be much more. It's not a huge walkway.
If you're talking about retaining that bank, you're talking about spending a lot of money.
Okay, well, maybe we just decide to abandon it and have a different approach to the footbridge.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we'll find out more because we're getting into conjecture here. And the wharf, John, what's happening at the wharf? Some things are finished now, are they?
Well, they said they finished the work in December, and there's a photo of the barge that they were using and things like that being picked up by a big crane, which is in the community board agenda. They're also talking about what they're going to do in the future with the eastern walkway and the western walkway, so either side of the wharf, and the new pontoon they're proposing to build.
Wait, there's going to be an eastern walkway? Is that what going toward Lorenzen Bay?
Yep. Lorenzen Bay is east of the wharf.
Wasn't there just a slip along there?
Yes, there's a rather spectacular slip.
Yes.
I wouldn't like to be the owner of the house, which has now got a much better view of the bay than it used to have.
It's just what you need. Yeah. So, all right. That was a plan. And I guess, I don't, but, yeah, I don't know what I guess.
Again, we haven't seen what the consent conditions are that they're working to, because they seem to have got consent, but neither regional council nor district council have bothered to consult anyone or say what the conditions are.
So, hold on, this is the first I've heard about the Eastern Walkway. We'll call it the Eastern
Walkway. Well, it's the Eastern Walkway to get to the pontoon. So to get across from the slip wharf, across the slipway, and round the corner to where the pontoon's going to be, they need to chop some of the Pahutukawa trees which are there to put a walkway up against that coast.
Oh, is that just a little bit?
These are walkways. They're not cycleways, so they're not huge. They're probably 1.8 metres wide, I'm guessing. But
yeah, but I mean, it's just a short run from to where the pontoon.
Well, relatively
is.
Short, yeah.
Hey, not all the way to Lorenzen Bay.
Well, that's a long-term option, but no, the current project is just to go as far as the pontoon.
Okay, so all right, let's not confuse things by adding that into the mix then.
They also talk about ensuring that it's cost-effective, able to be consented, and meets the requirements, but we don't know what the requirements are or what the consent conditions are, or we're not even too sure what the budget is, because they seem to have got extra money from the government and extra money from council, but I've not seen the total figure.
But there was a design.
Yeah, well, that's what puzzles me, that they're talking about. Well, they're talking about refining the SP3 design, so quite what there is to refine, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it was.
We're talking about things that neither of us know too much about, so
it just never stopped us before,
maybe
John.
Maybe we go along to the meeting tomorrow and find out.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe the design was at a conceptual stage. So when you go to actually design, like I've been in the situation when you actually go to design something for real, there's practical realities to incorporate into the design.
And there are also people saying that there was a cheaper design which they rejected, and the people I've talked to don't know why it was rejected.
Because the other one was more popular, perhaps? Because they did get a lot of... The reason we're wondering about all this is because there was a lot of strong community feedback.
Well, the original design was to have steps all the way along, and the later design asked us to choose between steps at one end or steps at the other.
Okay. So that steps that down into the water.
The steps all the way along are cheaper. But I've not investigated that, and whether it's true or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay. We're talking about conjecture out there amongst...
Yes.
Okay, all right. Don't pay too much attention to that fact, folks. We're not reporting facts there. The next thing on your list is the water care update. So we've talked about that. Someone will be talking to the community board about Three Waters issues. So we'll move on to the next one, John.
Except I think they're only talking about the sewage. We've also got the stormwater issue, and they're taking $330,000 out of the Raglan stormwater budget to pay for work at Cambray Road, which will involve putting in some new pipes and daylighting some of the Waikowhai stream there.
That's not because of the current slip, that's because of the walkway problem discussed last year.
In that area. it's kept complicated.
There's the walkway, the slip. What else was there? The other slip.
Yes.
The one into the water and the one onto the driveway at the corner of Cambray Road.
Yeah.
The sharp at the bend. Okay, all right.
Maybe the answer is to do what they've done over at Rangitai and just level the whole lot and start again. But
you can't level anything there. It's just level just doesn't come into it.
Well, that's pretty landscape. Much what they've done over at Rangitai.
Oh, I see. Before the houses were
built.
They've
taken the top off one hill and filled in the valley on the other.
You can do that when there's no houses, John. Yeah. Can I talk about the Waikowhai walkway now?
Yeah, well, that's one of the three things in that area.
Oh, is that it? Right. Why is it called that?
Because it's the Waikowhai stream.
Ah. Is its stream always been called that?
It has for a long time, yes.
I had a horrible feeling they'd named the walkway after a subdivision further up the valley.
I think the stream name came before the subdivision.
That would be... In fact, they were going to call it something else, and then the developers...
They were going to call it Stonebridge.
Yeah, which is one of those horrible twee names that they give subdivisions. So, yeah, thank you for whoever pointed it out to them to call it Waikawhai. Moving on. nothing to say about roading.
Yeah, well...
Where did you put that in then?
The new thing is that a new manager has been appointed. I didn't know that the old one had gone.
Shifted councils.
It's one of these problems that we keep on having as turnover of staff. We've apparently got a new roading manager who started on the 23rd of January and has been invited to the meeting.
All right. He or she won't know much.
It says that the quarterly roading report will not be available until March due to lack of resources, which is probably lack of a manager to write the report.
Yeah, okay. So moving on, do we have anything to say about the Manu Bay breakwater?
Well, I know that this one keeps getting put back as well, so we've now got what was supposed to be a meeting in January, which is now a meeting at the end of March, probably.
Yeah, Community Board Chairperson Dennis wanted to please explain about how on earth it was getting delayed again last year. So,
if he wants explanations on why the thing's delayed, he's going to have a long meeting.
Might have to drive over to somebody's office. Sound Splash... A report for the 2023 event will be given to the Community Board once the review is complete. So not yet.
Yeah, but probably it doesn't matter too much because things aren't going to be planned until, the middle of the year. Usually tickets go on sale in the middle of the year and the planning happens after that.
When they've got the money.
When it's been sold out, then they start doing the planning.
Yeah, so it's not like there's one every month, so there's no panic at this point. It's still February.
It does seem rather odd that it does go that way around. And, of course, there were complaints about the number of tents left lying around as usual.
Yeah, some of those... I call it North Shore Syndrome. I don't know if it's kids from the North Shore, but the spoiled kids from the North Shore is a bit of a cliche up in Auckland. And, more money than care, that's for sure.
And the minutes of the previous Community Board meeting say that the council requested additional infrastructure to stop long waits at the airfield when parking.
So that was...
long waits still happened.
Yeah, I think... I've talked to people about this, but I don't know all the... I can't remember all the details. I think you
saw... There was a bus that broke down and they had driver's hours to consider, so those were the excuses. But
The drivers turned up and said, we're not working now because it's time for our break. And so... just no buses were running. Yeah.
But that's something you might expect because you know that drivers have got hours that they need to fit in with.
I think every time you get bottlenecks and every time you solve one bottleneck, it shifts to a new place. So I think this is stuff that's going to continue to be refined. For instance, they did have some shelter, sun shelter, but then...
Okay, that's the additional infrastructure that they were talking about.
That's part of it. But then... The new bottleneck was not where that shelter was, for instance. I think that's what happened. Don't quote me on that, but yeah. So it gets finessed every year. But moving on to the next thing.
There's a mystery over the playground at Greenslade Road because nobody that I've talked to seems to know quite what it is or what's being proposed.
I thought there was.
Apparently it's over budget, whatever it is.
Everything's over budget, isn't it? So this is... Okay, all right. More detail to follow. I'll be at the Community Board meeting, so I'll get more details on this.
Because one of my complaints is that there's so little detail in the Community Board agendas these days, which is a problem for not only the Community Board, but the whole community to know quite what's going on.
But Ross Wallace is going to provide an update. No, that's about the swimming pool. Who's providing the update about that?
Well, that's the Rangitahi project. So this seems to be a private project at Rangitahi.
Back up to the playground, point number nine, the playground issue. Is anyone reporting on that, or are they going to go, okay, here's what it says in our agenda, now we've got some questions and nobody can answer the questions?
You may well be right.
Although usually the CFO comes out, the financial officer, so she actually will probably be able to answer that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks, how do you think of this level of detail we're giving you? We're coming up to 10 o'clock. We are going to hear about the meeting about the swimming pool project at Rangitahi, which, as John said, is private. Reports... discretionary funds, still plenty of cash in that after it kind of built up over through the COVID years.
Yep.
So if you need
$13,000 in it, and the group that's trying to do something about the weeds along Kaitoke Walkway is asking for $1,500 of that to get a management plan done so that they can actually have a plan as to what they're going to do and how they're going to get rid of the weeds on Kaitoke Walkway.
Yeah, yeah. And John has helpfully provided an issues missing from the agenda, a very long list of things.
Well, there always is a long list of things. It seems to me that one of the problems with the council is that they come up with bright ideas and then something stops them doing it and they just forget about it. Because we just talked about the swimming pool, and about 4 years ago the community board did a survey of what the most important things were for Raglan and got over 300 people responding, and the swimming pool was well up that list, but nothing's happened except that Rangitai is actually taking it on as one of their projects.
Sorry, on the air at the moment. The swimming pool?
We shouldn't be on the air because we've gone past 10 o'clock.
So. No, I was just going to say the swimming pool, like when that came in at number one, I knew that the council wasn't going to build that. Like, that's very expensive. And things like that, there has to be someone in the community who takes that up as a mission and works hard to make it happen and raises money from outside of council. That's how the museum was done. We also shouldn't expect that we can just keep asking council to do every little idea that we have, because there isn't capacity for that. Clearly, there isn't even capacity to get our stormwater system sorted out. So,
They come up with money for lots of other things, like the wharf, for example. Nobody except the fishing club was pressing all that hard for anything.
Well, yeah, but you know where that money came from. That's not council's money. That was government. Both times they got money for the wharf, the government came to the council and said, we've got some cash, what project have you already got on the books? And that's a real problem. They can't go, we've got a great idea. They're like, no, we're not interested in your idea. We want something that's ready to go.
Why did they have the wharf on the books and they didn't have the swimming pool, which had they?
No, well, okay, so explain that more clearly. So there wasn't work was required for the wharf, but that was the provincial growth fund. They came to district council and they said they actually wanted to spend money on something like a wharf. And for Waikato district council, it's the only wharf that they've got. So the staff, there was an opportunity to get some money out of central government. So staff worked hard just before Christmas 1 year to get the application in and do all the stuff they had to do. Both those things are, it is, and I think the government's like, they want a quick turnaround so they can go back to the voters and say, here's what we did.
Yeah, that was Shane Jones at that time, wasn't it?
Because he wants to stand at the next election in front of a project that he's made happen. And so with a 3-year cycle.
And didn't want the allegation that it was all being spent on Northland and nothing anywhere else.
So hence they came to our region and said, give us something, please, to throw money at. Yeah, that's the way it goes, John.
Yes. Not that the government's at all corrupt.
No, we haven't got time for that. We definitely haven't got time for that. You're on the air tonight, 6 o'clock?
Yep, as usual. I've not worked out what I'm doing, but you did do an interesting interview with Lisa last week.
Yeah, some of that will be out of date, because a lot of it was about the state of State Highway 23.
Which was about to close, but you didn't know it at the time.
We suspected it was. Someone's trying to call. Oh, that's probably the buses. Got to go, folks. I've got to answer this phone. Back soon tomorrow morning.